Welcome to EAA Radio. I'm Wireless Mike, and it's 12:34. We have Paul in the studio, and we're also joined by Bill English from the NTSB, and you're a senior investigator of major investigations?
That's right, based in Washington.
Based in Washington. So what does a senior investigator do on a day-to-day basis?
Well, Mike, the major investigations, we're the groups that's the leader of the go team. So just like in the movies, we have those windbreakers that say NTSB on the back, and we'll assemble a major team for generally airliner-type accidents. So we'll bring out a team of maybe 10 to a dozen folks that are experts in all the different aspects of a major airline Part 121 accident.
And Bill, can you just sort of take us through the steps of an investigation? And because it seems like a massive undertaking that has to occur behind the scenes to get this going. So run us through, if you could, just a brief synopsis of that.
Sure thing. And you're right, Paul. It is it's a massive undertaking, if you can imagine. One of the major investigations I just finished up was the Asiana accident in San Francisco. And that was one like that, where we had to leverage all sorts of expertise. Our agency is very small. We only have less than 400 people total, about 150 or so in aviation. So obviously, we can't be experts on everything. So when we hear about a major investigation like that, I'll start to assemble a team of experts from our staff, people who have background in power plants, engines, structures, air traffic control, meteorology, and so on. And we also use the expertise from the parties to the investigation, the airline, the manufacturer, in that case Boeing, and so on. So we'll hear about a major case like that most often through the media, maybe through the FAA or different sources. And we maintain a go team that's ready to go within 2 hours' notice. We assemble up, get on, we use FAA airplane, and head to the site with our team and meet up and assemble there as soon as we can. One of the first things we'll try to do then is secure the scene, pin down the scene, find perishable things like the flight recorders and CVR, what they call the black boxes, which I think you all know aren't really black. They're orange.
Yeah, orange. Exactly.
Right? Of course, we've got some actually over in the Federal Pavilion if you want to see some. We've got some there in our booth. But that starts the process there, and we want to make sure that we've got a good, solid team and an investigative structure right off the bat to start eating the elephant. It's a big project. Something like that, 450,000 pounds of airplane on a major airport. We do need to be pretty well organized and to get that done.
And Bill, what are some of the issues and challenges you face when you're handling an investigation that's not in the U.S.?
Well, that's true. We do work on investigations outside the U.S. as well through the ICAO, the International Civil Aviation Organization treaties. So when there are U.S. airlines or U.S. manufactured airplanes overseas, we will respond to that. We take a secondary role there. The country in which the accident occurred is the leader of that investigation. So we have to be able to work with anywhere up to 189 other nations that are signatories to that. We have to be ready to go at a moment's notice to any country. And vice versa. Again, with the Asiana accident, we were now working with our Korean counterparts and a Korean airline and had to work with them as well.
Do most of the other countries that you work with, are they pretty open to our involvement? Or, you know, or do some of them, you know, get a little territorial, or does that kind of depend on who you're dealing with on a given incident?
It really does depend on that particular country, the political situations that are going on in the world. Most everybody in the accident investigation world is, we all know of the treaty, we all know each other. That's a small world, but there's a lot of other pressures that can happen as well from the outside. As you can imagine, a major accident can be a political football.
Sure. And Bill, you're obviously most visible for the type of events that you're talking about, the airlines and some other accidents, but we know that the NTSB is also heavily involved in events that occur in general aviation and business aviation. Is that the larger percentage of your work?
Numbers-wise, yes. We investigate approximately 1,700 accidents a year. The vast majority of those are general aviation. Some of them are very large cases as well, where we might get into some detailed work, a larger group. You talked about business aviation. We're currently working on a pretty complicated accident with a Gulfstream jet in near
yes.
Boston.
It
has been recently. So general aviation spanning everything from large biz jets like that down to very small, two-seat trainers. These are still accidents that we're obligated to investigate and do provide probable cause on that.
And are they handled out of the Washington office, or do you have regional investigators as well?
Yeah, we have regional investigators. There's about 40 of those. Those folks specialize in general aviation. Typically, it's a much smaller team, of course. Sometimes. Sure. Just them, manufacturer, maybe a regional FAA representative, and they are scattered about the country. We used to have 10 physical offices, but we've spread out quite a bit now, doing more of a virtual office so that we can cover the country pretty well with those folks.
Now, let's say you go through your whole investigation and you say, wow, we really know what caused this accident and we've seen a trend in this area. And what do you do then?
Well, that's probably the most important product that we do. Figuring out the what and the why is the first step. And then what do you do about it is where we get our safety recommendations from. And we can't make laws or regulations, changes like that. But what we can do is use that investigation to make a recommendation, usually to the FAA, could be to manufacturers. And when we see a larger trend like that, we can also push for changes through special investigation reports. For example, we've got some that are working right now with maintenance, fatigue in maintenance area, also with general aviation and weather encounters. So when we look at broad trends like that, we can also make some recommendations for improvements or changes.
In relation to general aviation, I know that you have a significant number of recommendations across the board, but what specifically are some of your initiatives for general aviation?
Right now, we've got quite a few going that are on our general aviation most wanted list. The weather encounters is one of the big ones right now. We're looking a lot of that.
You mean VMC to IMC?
VMC or to IMC, thunderstorm encounters, exactly. There's a lot of technology out there, but technology is only as good as the operation and the training behind it.
Of course.
Yeah.
Are you finding that people are trying to use the newer technologies and finding themselves in situations that they shouldn't be because they thought they could get around some of this? And
that's one aspect. Yeah, some overconfidence maybe is happening. They think, well, the magic box will save me. But, again, it only is as good as the operator.
Yeah. Sure.
And so if somebody wants to listen to your recommendations and learn about your recommendations, where can they find like your top 10 list or something like that?
Yep. Our most wanted list is published www.ntsb.gov. We have the most wanted list section is there. Any recommendations that we make are always online, including the responses we get back from the FAA or manufacturers. So you can see the whole back and forth. All our accident reports are there, including the full docket, so you can dig pretty deep into the process behind those recommendations.
I suppose there is no typical day for you, is that correct?
I haven't had a typical day in 15 years.
Well, I'm sure that keeps it interesting for you.
It sure is. Yeah. I wouldn't do anything else. This is great.
So, being on the GO team for the major accident investigations, now, fortunately, there aren't a whole lot of those happening at any given time. What do you do when there aren't any major accidents?
Well, someone asked me that one time. It was a bomber pilot in the Air Force. I said, well, what do you do when there's nothing to bomb? I said, well, we practice, right? You practice. And what do we practice on are incidents and smaller level things. There's always something going on, whether it be a maintenance event, weather encounters that don't turn into an accident but might injure passengers, things like that all the time. And when you're working on a major accident, that does use up most of your time for probably a good year. But there's almost always something going on. I'm never bored.
We see that in the public media quite a lot, that the probable cause might take, or the investigation might take, up to a year or so. But because of all the things that are going on behind the scenes, I suppose you need that much time.
That's true. Yeah, the just finding the what, the tin kicking part, the reading the data is not that complicated. But to get that story told properly takes a lot of work, and then getting all the parties and everybody involved to make sure that they have their say.
So you have a lot of data that you need to mine and sift through.
Exactly right.
So do you have a timeline of how long you have to have that report out by after some sort of incident?
Now, there's no real requirement, but for a major accident, we try to shoot for a year to 18 months.
Okay. Yeah.
Just from a structural standpoint, you said that you're a relatively small government agency, but who do you actually report to?
We don't report to anybody, just straight to Congress and the president. We're an entirely independent agency, not part of the DOT or anything like that.
That's interesting.
But unfortunately, that also doesn't give you powers to enact any of your recommendations.
That's correct, and that's by design, because we can stand aside and be that sort of independent watchdog and don't have to investigate our own regulations.
And that seems to make a lot of sense.
Is there anything that you would like to say to the Experimental Aircraft Association audience? I mean, we have a lot of people here. What's your one message that you would like to leave them with?
Well, I think, as always, our message is always safety. And I think there's a lot of information out there. Here at Oshkosh, there's an enormous trove of information that people can take in to help keep them flying safely. And I think that's imperative if we want to keep the industry going and growing. We can't have too many rashes of accidents here in the current environment.
Is this your first time at EAA?
Nope. I was here 2 years ago and enjoyed every minute of it.
Well, we have been talking with Bill English of the NTSB, and you're listening to EAA Radio.